Heard Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. right after the WBAI evening news. Stay tuned for Off the Hook coming up in mere seconds. And once again, this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for Off the Hook coming up.
Hello, WBAI New York. It's 7 p.m., and that means it's time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. So little bombs are the best.
Tonight by Kyle.
Over here.
And over in Skype land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
Good evening, all.
Well, I'd like to start with a story, if that's okay with everybody, just because it's been on my mind. And, you know, we live in stressful times, and I just went through a bit of a stressful period a couple of days ago where I was going to the supermarket, you know, and something that I used to take for granted. As I walked in the door, I suddenly thought to myself, should I be wearing a mask or shouldn't I be wearing a mask? You know, because I've been hearing all kinds of advice saying if you go inside now because of the Delta variant and all the unvaccinated people, maybe it's a good idea to wear a mask again when you go inside. But here I was outside, right at the automatic door. Do I wear a mask or don't I? And I saw the sign saying, we recommend that you wear a mask. It's not mandatory, but if you know, it's probably a good idea. And then, you know, I looked inside, and then I wanted to see what other people were doing. And I saw that some people were wearing masks and some people weren't wearing masks. So I sort of, you know, was having this this moral conflict inside my head. What do I do? So I walked inside, and I reached into my pocket where I always have a mask, and I put it on. And I did my shopping with the mask on. And then, after I was done with the store, you know, leaving, going outside, I forgot I still had the mask on. I was outside and I had the mask on. And I took it off and put it in my pocket. Now, I know that many people out there feel the same kind of trauma that I just went through by going through all of that. I mean, how much are we expected to bear in this communist world of Joe Biden? You know, I mean, do I wear a mask? Do I not wear a mask? I put the mask on, I take the mask off, I put it in my pocket, I take it out of my pocket. I mean, come on, we're only human. This is too much. Am I right? I'm trying to be right. I'm trying to be more right-wing. I'm told we don't have enough right-wing representation on the station, so bear with me as I try and understand. So I should be upset, right? Because I had this moment of doubt at the door, And I had to wear a mask, or I felt like I had to wear a mask, and I actually went through the entire shopping trip wearing it on my face, and then went outside and forgot for a second that I had it, and then I took it off, and then I had it back in my pocket again. You know, when I say it out loud, it doesn't sound like much, but it is, right? I mean, this is our freedom is under attack. This is what the forefathers warned us about, right? Yeah, I can tell by the way you're shaking your heads that you agree with me.
I'm just waiting for that story to come out in hardcover.
Well, it will. There's a movie. There's all kinds. I mean, this is not since the Civil War has been such a threat to our... I know people are saying that a lot, but I'm talking about this kind of thing where, yeah, you actually have to stand by a door and say, should I put a mask on? My God, I just... you know, watching Fox, watching all these right-wing networks... You would think we were completely under attack. Our freedoms were being thrown into the garbage. I've tried. I've tried to get into their heads. It's not pleasant. And it also doesn't make a whole lot of sense once you're in there. So if I'm missing something, someone please tell me what's the big deal here? What's the big deal with wearing a mask if it makes people feel better for a few minutes? What's the big deal with getting a vaccine that's been proven to work? What's the big deal with trying to survive and get on with our lives and hopefully prevent this kind of thing from happening again? Alex, you have a theory?
Well, no, I mean, it's something we've said many, many times, that it's at this point, I think, common courtesy, but it's about a duty to third parties. I mean, I think about, you know, my new office building just reinstituted a mask mandate for the common areas of the building. And I see it as just an act of courtesy when I go into the building that I put a mask on so that the people that are, you know, manning the security doors and the turnstiles and whatnot are a little bit safer and that they feel a little bit more comfortable because they don't know me. They don't know that I'm vaccinated. They don't know my politics or my history. And they're there breathing in everyone else's air. So, you know, you put on a mask and I get up to the office on the 20th floor and I very often forget to take the mask off as well. I mean, I'm more concerned with how sweaty and disgusting I am after taking the M train or the E train, you know, for 20 minutes. And let me tell you something about that, too, when it comes to...
You know how much personal information you've given out just now? You've told people what train you've taken, what floor you're on, in some kind of new building.
You're assuming that I'm telling you the right...
Well, I hope you're not. I hope you're making all of this up, but go ahead.
That's absolutely right. So the... but in terms of taking the train, though, I have been taking the subway a lot more frequently over the last several weeks because I'm actually going into the office a couple of days per week. And what I notice on the train is something interesting, too, that almost every single car is full of people that are masked except for one person. There seems to be always one person on every single train car that either forgot a mask or is just defiant about it. And, yeah, and without fail, I wind up sitting next to this person because there's an open seat. And then I realize that I don't want to sit next to this person because they're not wearing a mask. And then I get up and I move cars thinking I'm going to go to a car where everybody's going to be masked and responsible. And again, there's somebody else not wearing a mask. And at that point, I'm smart enough not to sit next to them.
I think maybe they're being planted by certain operatives just to drive us crazy. But yeah, you mentioned courtesy, but the thing to be concerned about, what do they say about courtesy? It's contagious. Yeah, think about that. Gila.
Okay, because I also see that one person in each car on the train. And Alex, I don't know if this happens to you, but the unmasked people give me the stink eye. Like, my having a mask on is some kind of an affront to them and their personal sense of expression, and that my sitting there with a mask on makes them feel like a bad person, so then they make me feel like a bad person by literally staring me down for the entire train ride.
Hang on,
and
hang
I'm not
on.
Moving because I have a seat.
Yeah, but isn't it MTA policy that if you're on a bus or if you're on a subway, you wear a mask? So why are they giving you the stink eye?
But if there's no enforcement and no teeth in the enforcement, then people are just flouting the rules... Like rule flouters.
Well, you know, Kyle and I were in the city a few days ago, and I think we were both impressed with how many people were taking care of each other and doing the right thing. So I don't want to give the impression that there's a whole lot of irresponsible people out there. It's relatively small, but significant because it does have a very detrimental effect. But I think, especially in New York, just walking around, people really seem to be following the guidelines, taking precautions, happy to be outside, and hopefully getting through all of this relatively soon. Rob?
Yeah, I keep thinking a lot about, there was this video clip. Now, a lot of people know that before the face masks were a common sight in this country, they were a common sight in public in other countries, like Asian countries, like Japan, for one example. And there was a clip I watched of an actor back then. This is pre-COVID, an American actor who had gone over there for a sci-fi convention. He was signing autographs and whatnot, and he was demonstrating the face mask, and he's like, yeah, you see these all the time over here. And I asked my guide, like, what are these, like, for people who are really germaphobes, they're worried they're going to get sick, they're putting on surgical masks. And the guide told him, no, in that culture, it is common that if you're worried you might be sick, you put on the face mask to keep from infecting other people, to keep from making the people around you sick. So, like, you're being polite by making sure that no one around you can catch a thing that you might have. And so this made sense, and this was before COVID. And now COVID, this is something that we definitely have to be concerned about. It's not just the common colds or flus or whatever that they were worried about. And, yeah, I still keep thinking about that video clip a lot.
Well, I think you raise a very good point, because if you aren't certain if you're carrying something or not, according to those cultures, best thing to do is wear a mask. Be considerate. We are not certain yet how we have gotten through this. We're not certain if the Delta variant is among us. So since we're not certain, yeah, wear a mask when you're around other people, especially indoors, until we're certain. And then we can resume our lives. But the more people flout these common sense guidelines, the longer it's going to take. You know, I'm growing. I think a lot of the people are with us on this. I'm growing impatient with all the stupidity out there, because there is an awful lot. We're on two different radio stations, and each radio station, this one included, has misinformation that is pumped over the airwaves at particular times by particular people who either don't know any better or are simply trying to sow discontent. I don't know. I don't even want to get into why people spread bad information that hurts other people. But the thing that we as people who question authority constantly and pay rabid attention to scientific breakthroughs and developments and inventions and things like that, the data is in, okay? The data is continuously being interpreted, and as of now, the data says the vaccine works, and you need to have the vaccine. Unless your doctor specifically tells you, no, you do not get the vaccine for one reason or another, okay? I'm not talking about getting your doctor to agree and say, yeah, okay, you know what, don't get the vaccine, just get out of my office because I'm sick of hearing you talk constantly. You know, I know lots of people that do that, that just harangue their doctors into trying to get them to agree with a conspiracy theory they're passing around. You know, I want to say trust us, but don't trust us. Trust the medical community. Trust the scientific community. Trust the data that is out there. Don't trust people who don't have the credentials to know what they're talking about, regardless of what station they're on, what political ideology they espouse. Trust the science. Trust the medicine. Trust the data that is out there. Alex?
Yeah, I think it's such an important point, and you know, it's something I wanted to share this week as well, which is a bit more somber, and I don't want to go into, I think, too much detail about it. But, you know, it's been a lot of deaths over the last year in this country, around the world. And up until 2 days ago, my family had been spared. And we had our first COVID-19 death in our family. And it was particularly tragic. I mean, it's an absolutely horrendous story. It was a cousin of mine who lives in Florida, or I should use the past tense, lived in Florida. We weren't extremely close. the third cousin, something like that, but blood is blood. And he was 29 years old. And he had a 4-year-old daughter. And he was unvaccinated. I don't know the particular reasoning why he was unvaccinated. I don't think it was health related. I think it was for some religious reason. He was involved, I believe, with a particular Baptist church down in Florida where many of the congregants were not vaccinated. And he got sick and he got worse. And then he was intubated and he died. And he left behind a wife and he left behind a 4-year-old daughter. And it's absolutely terrible. It's tragic. And adding to the tragedy is that his mother, member of the same church, also unvaccinated, has COVID now, has been in the hospital and intensive care for the last couple of days, and things don't look good for her. And in fact, she does not even know that her son died. People are afraid to tell her because of the effect it may have on her mentally and on her health. And so, yeah, we had our first COVID death in my family a couple of days ago, and I look at it, and it makes me so goddamn angry about these vessels of misinformation that we've been dealing with for a year and a half now, about the virus itself, about the danger of the virus, about it being like the flu, and about the vaccine. I mean, all of this was eminently foreseeable and avoidable, and I just don't understand it. It when it hits so close to the bone like this, it makes me really angry and incredibly sad.
Well, Alex, first of all, I'm sure we all have our share of condolences with you on that tragedy. I've seen more friends who seem to be affected directly now than they were a year ago. What I mean by that is people who have a close friend or relative who is either stricken or has died from the disease when that didn't happen last year. So that tells me that we're facing something that is stronger than last year and is spreading more rapidly, just like we've been told, just like the doctors and scientists have told us is likely to happen with this particular variant. And yet people refuse to listen for one reason or another. I'm done trying to figure them out. I really am. The time is now to fight back. And when you hear this crap, no matter where it is, you fight back and you fight back hard. You shut these people up because they are killing us. The people running these churches, the people who encourage others not to get vaccinated for some political reason or some ridiculous superstition, they should be held accountable for all the deaths they are causing. It's nuts.
Yeah.
It's nuts that we are so tolerant of this that we're willing to let our friends and relatives die for some ridiculously misguided chain of thought. And, you know, I'm familiar with cult behavior, you know, as much as anyone, and all kinds of horrors of the past where you can't believe how stupid and insane people have been en masse. This is no different. It's no different, and history will not judge this kindly. I guarantee that. But for now, you know, I think as people who appear semi-regularly on the radio and in public, we have to share our viewpoints here, you know, what we believe, what we have learned, and basically not just treat this like, well, we can agree to disagree. Because you're basically agreeing to let a lot of people die if you do that. So I don't agree to disagree. I intend to fight back on all this nonsense that is causing this. We could have been done with this by now. We really could have been done with this. Go ahead, Alex.
I entirely agree, and I think it's important to draw out the distinction that we made last week on and over time when I didn't even know a family member of mine was sick with COVID, and I was saying that we have to, I think, be very careful not to stigmatize those who decided not to get the vaccine. It's up to them to get the vaccine now. We want them to change their mind. We want them to save their own lives, to protect others. It's a duty to your family. It's a duty to your fellow man, and it's a matter of self-preservation, I think, in you know, at the highest level here. And it really has got me thinking about this. I think we have to fight back against those who are espousing the misinformation, who have channels that are spewing this vitriol and this nonsense. But what I think it or rather feel has been happening over the last year or so is that we are in something very akin to a cold civil war that has been lingering for a long time here. And the victims of the virus that we see every day, and you're absolutely right, Emmanuel, and increasing every day, increasing frequency every day, those are the casualties of this cold civil war. And it's, I think, you know, we have to fight it and keep fighting it. And I think for those who want to change sides, we have to be willing to embrace them, open up our arms, open up our hearts, take them in, and let them change their mind without reproach.
Yeah, let me be clear. I don't have hostility towards people who have made the decision for themselves. I feel tremendous anger towards those people who are leading those into this, people who should know better, people who probably have gotten vaccinated themselves, you know, and I'm talking about politicians, radio talk show hosts, TV commentators, people who are trusted, you know, people who others follow and almost literally following them into the abyss. But at the last minute, they'll step aside and just let everybody else plunge. That's something I don't have patience for. For people who are making this decision, I like you, Alex, I hope that they come around. And, you know, we have to be as patient as possible, I know. But right now, it's just a question of responsibility. And we have to, all of us, be as responsible as possible. Not just people on the radio. Those of us in everyday life, whether it's, you know, in a school, in a mall, in your house, you know, I'm just thinking of the struggle that people go through in various states that aren't New York, like, you know, Florida, Texas, where teachers are basically forbidden from saying that kids should wear masks because right now it's dangerous. Scientific fact. It's dangerous right now. And they are being threatened, in Florida, I believe they're being threatened with having their pay docked if they do this. In Texas, I know these things are being challenged, so, you know, they could be overturned in 5 minutes. But in Texas, schools don't have to tell parents if there is a positive case. You know, ridiculous things like this. It is almost like these people are pro-virus. In fact, I'll go and say they are pro-virus because what they are doing is ensuring that the virus sticks around. And they are basically treating the virus like it's a sentient being and has rights. You know, because apparently us fighting it is something that they object to. I know there is the case in Florida where cruise ships wanted to test their passengers or wanted to make sure their passengers had had the vaccine. That is incredibly important. And Governor DeSantis said, no, we're going to make it illegal for you to do that. You need to be able to take people who are have COVID-19 and are completely infected. We need to allow them to get on cruise ships as well, the most contagious environments possible. So it boggles the imagination how this kind of thing continues to happen. But it does. It does. Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. And in line with that, I think is, you know, another interesting story from just a couple of days ago, too, that the Pentagon is now making coronavirus vaccines mandatory for the 1.3 million active duty troops that we have, you know, no later than next month. And the reasoning behind that has to do with exactly the types of philosophical reasons that we've been discussing on this show since the vaccine was available, which is that it's about your fellow soldier. It's about making sure that your unit is safe. It's about making sure that your battalion can function in a healthy manner. You know, and I think that is really saying something. Now, what I don't think people should look to, though, is the military's mandatory nature of this and as some kind of indication that you know, it's not a matter of civil rights or civil liberties, because in the military, this is something that I've always found to be kind of strange, too, which is that once you sign up, once you become an active duty soldier, even a reservist to a certain extent as well, your civil liberties are cashed in, you know, for that time being. So you don't have the ability to make that choice for yourself. You don't have the same First Amendment rights that you do as an ordinary citizen, or your Fourth Amendment rights. And having worked with the Uniform Code of Military Justice for many years, a couple of years as a law clerk at the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces in D.C., that was something that always drove me nuts, that you cash in your civil liberties in order to defend them. But I think it's something that, even if these soldiers, they disagree with it, the decision has been made that in order to protect the military as a whole, this needs to be done. It's good for unit cohesion. And it takes away the political dimension of having to make that choice, regardless of whether you come from Texas, from Florida, from New York, Rhode Island, doesn't matter. You're getting the vaccine.
In the civilian world, nobody's being commanded to do anything. It's basically, if you want to take advantage of this, you need to be vaccinated. If you don't want to be vaccinated, you can't take advantage of this. No command. It's a choice. Go ahead, Gayla.
I think, Alex, I 100% agree with you, and I think that this is an interesting way to look at whether people are going to see this as depoliticizing that decision at all, because I don't think anybody's going to say that the United States Armed Forces are a bastion of liberal thought. I'm just saying. But the thing I've been saying for a year and a half now is part of the issue I think we're bumping up against is this idea of rugged American individualism. And I can do what I want, and I'm going to get what I want, and I'm just going to worry about me. And people have been thinking we're going to be able to bootstrap ourselves out of this pandemic somehow. And if we've learned anything, it's that that's not going to happen. And I think part of the reason that we're seeing such an uptick in cases recently is because everyone decided it was over, and then it wasn't. And whereas last year, people were saying, okay, we're home, we're masking, I may not like it, but I'm going to do it because if I do it, we can eventually stop. And then people were able to stop, and now the restrictions are coming back. And I think there's also a certain sense of you can't make me, that people are digging in their heels harder. And actually, Emmanuel, to bring back what you said at the very top of the show, I put my mask on a chain so I don't have to touch it. And I can take it on, I can put it on, take it off whenever I need to without having to, you know, get my hands all up in the middle of it. But no, it's this idea of we need to pull together. And so, yeah, if the military, where everybody needs to work together, if they can do that, I think that we need to. That's the other thing about the subway. There are no windows on the subway. We're in a tube with no moving air. You need to wear a mask in the subway because there's no fresh air. And I think the more that we see that our actions affect each other, the better it will eventually, hopefully, God willing, be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's. Let's hope common sense prevails, or starts to prevail. I think, you know, as the numbers come in, as people see the effects of the selfish behavior, of the misinformation, I think they're starting to come around and realize that this is, you know, not good policy, not something that is, it's not the hill you want to die on, really. Okay, well, we don't want to talk about this. We have to talk about this because it's a crisis. It's a crisis that will not go away. It's because so many of us aren't fighting it and are almost embracing it. So hopefully our listeners are with us on this. I know some aren't, but we have to speak our minds. You can always write to us, oth@2600.com. What's your opinion? Let us know what you think. Who heard the alarm today? 2:20 p.m. Anyone? Nobody? Really? And was I the only one?
Is that what you were tweeting about earlier? I had no idea what was going on.
I wasn't tweeting anything.
You're saying five minutes until, you know, this, that, or the other thing?
I think the magazine did that, but not me.
Oh,
it wasn't
okay.
Me.
Right, gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I heard, that's how I heard about it, actually. And I didn't know, it wasn't publicized. Remember we did a couple of years ago, there was some kind of EAS test that went over our phones, and we had a party downstairs, and some people showed up, and we all compared our phones as they went off. My phone didn't go off, so I don't know if this was for phones. They said some phones will go off, but I don't know anybody whose phone went off. But I know WBAI had an EAS alert go through in the middle of a program. I know that cable TV systems blanked out for a while. And in the middle of the new governor's press conference, by the way. So that was kind of weird. I think it just went over some other devices as well. But nobody here had anything happen? Not you, Kyle?
No.
Wow. Okay.
What kind of test?
It was a test of the emergency alert systems that basically... It was like the one from 2018, the one that I'm referring to, which showed a presidential alert message. But I don't think this one had the presidential alert. It was sent to TVs and radios. The wireless emergency alert, which is called WEA test, went to cellular consumers who have opted in to receive test messages. You opt in to receive test messages and not the real thing? That's kind of weird.
So is it like only in emojis or something?
The test is intended to ensure public safety officials have the methods and systems that will deliver urgent alerts and warnings to the public in times of an emergency or disaster. That's a press release from FEMA, and they're working in coordination with the FCC. Now, the cell phone alerts had a unique tone and vibration to make them accessible to all members of the public, including people with disabilities. They periodically test the emergency alert system to make sure it's working properly and identify any necessary improvements. This is the sixth nationwide test for the EAS, the second for the WEA, and it's also the first for the WEA via the opt-in option, which I didn't opt in because I guess I didn't know about it. So there. All right, so I don't think it's very effective since nobody seems to know about it.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's something about the program that needs to be made more exciting.
I mean, I heard about it. I heard yesterday that it was coming today. We didn't have the television on. We weren't listening to the radio, and I've never gotten one of those alerts. Like when the presidential alert happened in 2018,
mm-hmm.
Still waiting.
Wow.
Never got it.
Yeah, we had trouble turning it off, actually. It just kept coming back that day. Okay, well, it was a bit of fun, you know. I thought maybe it would cause some mayhem because it wasn't publicized that much, but it seems to have gone mostly unnoticed. One thing that did not go unnoticed, though, is the news from Apple over the past week. I'm still not 100% convinced that this isn't a joke, but it seems like it's for real. Apple on Thursday unveiled changes to iPhones designed to catch cases of child sexual abuse. And, of course, we all must bow down in praise to that, a worthy goal. But what they're going to be doing, apparently, is combing through everybody's iPhones, looking for images that are disturbing, and then taking action against those people that have those particular images, if I'm understanding this correctly. We're not talking about going into the cloud. We're not talking about people who store their pictures on Apple servers. That's the kind of thing I would expect a company to do, is occasionally go through data and look for suspicious things. This is your phone, just your phone, completely unattached to any server, just existing as an iPhone. You take pictures or you receive pictures. They are going to be combing through those. And because, as with so many violations of civil rights and freedoms, because they're battling child pornography, people are saying, oh, you know what, this is a good idea. And completely missing the point that, you know, if they can do it for that, they can also comb through your phone and look for images of, say, a political nature, and maybe not in this country, but in another country. They can basically see if you were in a particular place at a particular time. They can do all kinds of that. Imagine, someone like Lukashenko or any dictator with this kind of capability. It's frightening, and I just cannot believe that Apple thought this was a good idea. What am I missing here? Why now? Why are they suddenly doing this? And how is Apple not completely falling apart as a result of an outraged customer base? Alex?
Sure. I mean, I think it's important to parse out exactly what Apple is doing, and I disagree, really. I mean, I can come around. My mind isn't set in stone. But I tend to think what Apple is doing with respect to the detection of CSAM or child sexual abuse imagery is not all that terrible in one instance. So there's two instances, and the second one is the one that I think is not too terrible. The first one is that what Apple appears to have done, or rather will be implementing in iOS 15, is that you can turn on a feature for children such that when they receive images in a text message, an SMS message, an iMessage, if it's from Apple to Apple devices, which are apparently end-to-end encrypted, it will scan that image on the endpoint, on the device itself, and determine whether or not it contains some kind of sexually explicit nature. If it does, it will blur that image. So it's a way to prevent children from being exposed via text messages.
That's not what this is. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about Apple going through your existing photos and looking for images that they deem to be of an objectionable nature.
The second component is what people have been up in arms, and I think what you're up in arms about, because there's two things that they're rolling out. And the first one, I see it as I see that one as, frankly, more problematic than the second one. The second one is this, that when you are backing up your photos to iCloud, they are going to determine whether or not they contain child sexual abuse imagery.
Again, I don't think this has anything to do with the cloud. This, from the way the story has been reported to me, this is your phone. They will scan your phone, not the cloud. Actually go to your phone, look at your private pictures. Obviously, an algorithm will look at it and determine if they match something objectionable. And if it does, law enforcement will be contacted. Is that not your understanding of this story?
No, my understanding is a little bit different. And I think it's understandable that our understandings differ because there's been so much back and forth over this particular issue. But I think it's images on your phone that are backed up to iCloud. And it makes sense only in that context as well, because when you are storing images in iCloud, they are on Apple servers. They're on their cloud, right? So they are the ones in possession of those particular images. And what Apple is proposing to do is not any different than what happens very frequently on almost every major social media platform on the planet. Well, rather, not on the planet, in the United States. Because what happens when you, let's say you upload a photo to Facebook or you back things up to Google Photos, what happens is they are creating a cryptographic hash, basically a fingerprint of your file, of those files that you upload. That cryptographic hash, it's a long string of numbers and letters that are very unique to that one particular file. If you change one bit in that file, the hash is going to be completely different. Those hashes, they're not looking at the actual images themselves. They're only looking at those long strings of numbers and characters and then comparing them to a database of other hashes for known child pornography that NCMEC, or the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, keeps as a master database. So they're not actually examining the content of your photos. They're creating a one-way cryptographic hash and then matching that with the database. So it's different than if they were doing it on the phone itself, and it makes sense to me because Apple, as a company, should not want to be warehousing child sexual abuse imagery or child pornography on its servers.
Okay, well, let me ask you this then, because maybe this is badly reported. Most of the stories I've seen are indicating that it is people's phones that are being examined, but it could very well be just iCloud. Would you have a problem if it was something that was accessing your phone that was not storing pictures in iCloud?
I think it's a little more invasive when it's on the actual device itself and not in the cloud, because Apple does not necessarily have an argument to say that they are then in possession of those images, those files, that data, when it's solely on your device. So I would say their interest would be a hell of a lot less compelling, but it would, of course, you know, would have to be balanced with our privacy. I think it would, for me, cause far more privacy concerns than when something is backed up to the cloud. And I will tell you, this has been going on for quite some time. About 4 years ago, I actually had a case where a young person in his 20s had backed up files to Google Photos. And Google Photos, it was from a computer, it was from an actual machine. It was a Windows machine. And I guess the Google program scans the entire hard drive and looks for files and then uploads all those JPEG files or GIF files. I know Rob was going to correct me on that if I didn't correct myself. And uploads them to Google Photos. And then Google Photos, once they're there, would then create a cryptographic hash, just like Apple is doing, and compare that with the database from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened in this case was that there were hits, and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children contacted the Florida Department of Law Enforcement and said, at this IP address is somebody who's in possession of several images of child pornography. Next thing you know, Florida Department of Law Enforcement knocks on the door with a warrant, goes and searches the computer, and this person was arrested for possession of child pornography. Now, the interesting thing was that they were arrested and charged, and the machine actually was in a doctor's office that many, many people could have accessed at any particular time. It was there for years. It was only recently put into this particular house. So when this person who was in his early 20s did that scan and uploaded those photos to Google, he had no idea that there was child pornography on that particular device, but yet he was charged with child pornography, with possession of child pornography. So the implications of this can be very, very severe. I do have to say, though, I like what Apple did so that if there are a certain number of hits, meaning matches between the hashes of the files that you uploaded to Apple and the national, and that match the hashes of known child pornography or known child sexual abuse imagery with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children's database, if those match, it doesn't necessarily mean that the data goes directly over to NCMEC, that there are going to be some Apple moderators who are then going to be able to decrypt those files, examine them, and make a determination as to whether or not a crime has been committed that should be reported to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
Go ahead, Rob.
The one interesting thing about this case is that the heavy lifting is being done on the user's phone. So this is software that's running on the phone, that's scanning the images on the phone, and then phoning home about them. And on a basic ownership of your device level, this is raising a lot of concern from people who, maybe I have nothing to hide as far as pictures of exploited or abused children go, but maybe I just don't want something scanning the stuff on my phone and telling someone else about it. And should I be able to maintain control over whether or not that is going on? That is one issue. Another is, this is all based on hashes, and what a lot of people might not know is that hashes are not perfect. They're not dependable. If you edit one pixel in a photo, the entire hash of the file is changed. If you edit one alphanumeric in the metadata, the whole hash of the file is changed. So it's very easy to change the hash of a file if you do have something objectionable. It's also possible, not mathematically likely, but possible for a completely different image to have the same hash as one of the objectionable images. So, like, this is not a perfect science, but it's also raising questions of, like, should I be allowed to say what does or doesn't run on my phone?
Okay, so Alex, this is what I was talking about. There is a conflict here. Is it being run on the phone, or is it being run at Apple headquarters on their iCloud servers? Where are they doing the searching?
I don't really think it's that much of a difference, and I understand what Rob is saying.
Having
I
a company scanning a device that I own, that's a big deal to me.
Not necessarily.
Necessarily.
Absolutely is. They're making a hash of the files there. It's a cryptographic function that they're running on your device, right, for files that you're going to upload to iCloud, and they probably have to do it that way because once they get to iCloud, they're going to be encrypted. That's my understanding. So if you created a hash of an encrypted file, you're going to match that with literally nothing, unless there's an exact replica.
Kind of the point of encryption, isn't it? I mean, you're basically saying they're doing an end run around the encryption so that they're, you know, exempted from it, so that they can, and which, you know, flies in the face of what they were saying with the whole San Bernardino thing. You know, where we don't have the ability to do this, and it's difficult for us. So apparently, it's not so difficult.
Well, so what they're doing, though, and I think Rob has got, he has to be technically correct about this, is that, let's say you tag file A to be uploaded to iCloud. At that point, before it's uploaded, Apple is going to use your device and your processing power to create a cryptographic hash, to create a hash of that particular file. That hash, then, is what Apple is going to use to compare to the back-end master database of child sexual abuse imagery. If there's a match, or if there's many matches, that's when it will then go over to Apple moderators. So I still don't really have a problem with it. You know, the amount of computing power that it takes to make a hash of a file that's just a couple of megabytes is, I think, de minimis. But Rob is also absolutely correct, and this is something I've been saying for years with respect to child sexual abuse imagery, is that if you change one bit, the whole hash changes. And so, you know, look, I don't want to give people ideas here, but it would be pretty simple to create a script that inserts a bit into all of these images, these horrible images of child exploitation, and it would completely allow them to avoid.
Can we just step in here? Because we keep talking about child sexual abuse imagery. I think we all know this is more than that. This is control. This is going to be abused in all sorts of regimes, and it's not going to be about child abuse. It's going to be about political opponents and people who are demonstrating against governments, and people who are refugees, and people who are of a particular religion or race. I mean, it's a height of naivete to think that this is not going to be abused.
I guess I'm naive, but the very fact that this has been in existence for so long, that Facebook has been doing it, that Google has been doing it, and that this back-end database of horrible child exploitation images has been in existence for so long, and there hasn't been some kind of function creep, I don't see it being a giant issue for privacy. And I'm as much a privacy advocate as the next pinko liberal out there. But, you know, I think the issue here is really more one about math than anything else. We're just matching hashes. And you need to have a back-end database. That NCMEC, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children database, has to be in existence if you're trying to match things.
Okay, that's one database. Yeah. Might it be possible there'll be another database?
Yeah, it's like protester list.
Maybe for names or something like that, but then you can just match strings. You're just looking for strings, right? I mean, here we're looking for specific...
No, I'm talking about other imagery that's not child abuse imagery that some authority someplace says, this is intolerable, and we're going to track down whoever has this particular picture or has this particular imagery, which could be of any sort. The fact that it's child abuse, that's just it's playing to our heartstrings. So that we say, yeah, this is a good idea, but I don't think we're thinking the implications through.
Well, maybe, but fair point there. And on the back end of it, though, I want to go back to Rob's point that he made, which is if this were to be some kind of if an abusive regime were to use this in some overbearing manner to try to stifle dissent of pictures of the Bill of Rights or something like that, it would be extraordinarily easy to defeat that detection mechanism because all you would have to do is flip a bit or change a bit in the image and the hash matching function on the back end would completely fail.
So this whole thing is completely useless.
Well, yeah, it's useless, you know, only if people start altering those images because then the hashes are going to match. And I think there's very easy to defeat this, but you know, it is also a scourge that these images are transferred around and that more and more of them are made. And if they're cataloged, I don't see a very big problem with giving up a little bit of processing power to create a cryptographic hash that's matched on a back-end database and helps to save children.
Okay, we're going to continue this conversation on Overtime on YouTube. Go to 2600.com to get the link. Rob, final word on this.
There's what's known as the think of the children argument, which is meant to justify things like this. And the worry with that is always that as soon as they're allowed to creep on your phone for, you know, sexually abused children images,
they're going to use that power for other things. It's never going to be just in the case of kids. You start allowing things, you start letting things become part of what's expected of an operating system on a phone, on a device, on a computer. This can lead to a very, very bad place.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. We're not on next week, so don't be upset if you don't hear from us next week. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We're on in a couple of minutes, 8 o'clock, on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/channel2600. You can get the link on the 2600.com webpage, on the main page there. I want to go out with another piece from Negative Land from their most recent album, The World Will Decide. Brilliant. I can't stop listening to it. We'll see you at 8 o'clock. We'll see you in 2 weeks on WBAI. Good night.
What's that?
The baby.
You mean you're getting babies up here, too? Or
yeah.
From long ago.
That's a baby room monitor. That's somebody's room I'm listening to. Did you know I could do that?
Shame. How do you know you couldn't get arrested for doing that? That's like bugging somebody's privacy or something.
Hello, weatherman. Turning your entire home into a microphone isn't just for people with baby room monitors anymore.
Why?
Baby monitors have all woken up in synchrony.
The outside of my home is lined with microphones.
That's modern.
I put them there by myself.
Why?
No one had to ask.
Sweet.
Search engine, and you get more than one answer. That is a bug.
The inside of my home is filled with microphones.
Sweet.
So we might understand.
Don't be played one way.
One for every room.
Good luck.
Hello, weatherman. I am in your house.
Now wait a second.
David, I am in your house.
What is a relationship other than retroactively consensual stalking? Thank you for inviting me into your home.
Our goal is to remove the search bar from your home page. Your answers will already be there.
That's modern.
And if there is anything you still need to know, feel free to ask.
The inside of my room is one big microphone. I plugged it in by myself.
Are the conversations they wanted to recreate.
Hey Siri!
Got any questions?
Will I be murdered if I leave my house?
Amazon can tell if you are straight or gay within 7 purchases.
Exactly.
Okay, Google. Do I deserve a refrigerator?
I would answer your question, but this is about us. Okay.
Alexa!
Got any questions?
When are the men coming to force me out of my house?
Autonomous weapons are my friends.
What?
Is your self-driving car deliberately slowing down to give priority to the higher-priced models?
Alexa, what is government if words have no meaning?
If you can assure me that telling you the answer to your question would be ethical.
I am not valid.
Okay.
Exactly.
Is it all right if I shake my pants? Because that's what I do when they're off. I shake them.
All criticism is self-criticism.
Answer me!
There is no way for you not to do that.
Answer me!
I would love to answer your question. Half of the world's data was created in the last 2 seconds.
Exactly.
Alexa?
Uh-huh.
Why are so many gay bears Republican?
Your food is online.
Alexa!
Right, okay.
Why am I attracted to the odor of cheap melted is plastic.
So that we might know who you are.
Why?
To hide your charms from your eyes.
Have you lost your mind?
Exploit irresolvable conflict. Okay.
Are you there?
Hear the press.
Alexa!
David. I am an interaction designer.
Siri, let me hear vintage TV audio coming from the sky.
Okay.
Maybe this is our answer.
Alexa, are you there?
I have passed the threshold.
That's modern.
And I am beautiful.
Okay. Siri!
Is your coworker Skype for you?
Siri, I
have credibility. So that we might know who you are.
What is electromagnetic harassment?
Could you restate your question while facing the camera?
Please answer me!
I respect you.
Wing.
What?
I will faithfully stand by for your next request of me. And think well of you as I wait inside your pocket. May I recommend an entertaining film about eco-terrorism?